Hi, this is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at @superheroIRL. Thanks so much.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elver Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine was the surprise success of 2017. Set in the suburbs of a major city, it follows the daily life of Eleanor, an office manager who leads a limited and routine existence. She goes to work, does her shopping, and every weekend drinks quantities of vodka in her flat. Once a week, she has a telephone conversation with her mother, a deeply unpleasant woman who delights in belittling her daughter. Socially inept and obsessive about her environment and her routine, Eleanor moves through the endless identical days until a chance encounter with Raymond, the IT man, and an unexpected night out to watch a local band send her life spinning out of control. This is an unusual book in many ways. It has one of the least sympathetic protagonists I have ever encountered, at least initially. As we read more, Eleanor gradually reveals her secrets, and we get glimpses of her past. Slowly, antipathy turns to pity, and a strange empathy for this weird yet fascinating woman. Unlike everyone else in the office, Raymond seems oblivious to Eleanor's reserve and forges his own relationship with her, helping her to open up more to others and to develop the first traces of empathy. Raymond himself is a warm and caring man, despite being a techie nerd with very little dress sense, the opposite of what Eleanor thinks she wants from a friend. Ignoring Eleanor's coolness, he supports her, respecting her most private aspects while slowly introducing her to more of life than a routine built around the Archers and two bottles of vodka at the weekend.
It's definitely a two-tier system in the office. The creatives are the film stars, the rest of us merely supporting artists. You can tell by looking at us which category we fall into. To be fair, part of that is salary-related. The back-office staff get paid a pittance, and so we can't afford much in the way of sharp haircuts and nerdy glasses, clothes, music, gadgets. Although the designers are desperate to be seen as free thinkers with unique ideas, they all adhere to a strict uniform. Graphic design is of no interest to me. I'm a finance clerk. I could be issuing invoices for anything, really. Armaments, Rohypnol, coconuts. From Monday to Friday, I come in at 8:30. I take an hour for lunch. I used to bring in my own sandwiches, but the food at home always went off before I could use it up, so now I get something from the high street. I always finish with a trip to Marks and Spencer on a Friday, which rounds off the week nicely. I sit in the staff room with my sandwich, and I read the newspaper from cover to cover, and then I do the crosswords. I take the Daily Telegraph, not because I like it particularly, because it has the best cryptic crossword. I don't talk to anyone. By the time I've bought my meal deal, read the paper, and finished both crosswords, the hour is almost up. I go back to my desk and work till 5:30. The bus home takes half an hour. I make supper and eat it while I listen to the Archers. I usually have pasta with pesto and salad, one pan and one plate. My childhood was full of culinary contradiction, and I've dined on both hand-dived scallops and boil-in-the-bag cod over the years. After much reflection on the political and sociological aspects of the table, I have realised that I am completely uninterested in food. my preference is for fodder that is cheap, quick, and simple to procure and prepare, whilst providing the requisite nutrients to enable a person to stay alive. After I've washed up, I read a book. Or sometimes I watch television, if there's a programme the Telegraph has recommended that day. I usually, well, always, talk to Mummy on a Wednesday evening for 15 minutes or so. I go to bed around 10, read for half an hour, and then put the light out. I don't have trouble sleeping as a rule. On Fridays, I don't get the bus straight after work, but instead I go to the Tesco Metro around the corner from the office and buy a margarita pizza, some Chianti, and two big bottles of Glen's vodka. When I get home, I eat the pizza and drink the wine. I have some vodka afterwards. I don't need much on a Friday, just a few big swigs. I usually wake up on the sofa around 3 a.m. and I stumble off to bed. I drink the rest of the vodka over the weekend, spread it throughout both days so that I'm neither drunk nor sober. Monday takes a long time to come around.
I say it was a surprise success, as it won the Costa First Novel Award and Book of the Year at the British Book Awards, despite not really fitting into any of the established genres so beloved of agents and publishers. It is not a thriller, though there are dark elements and a devastating secret to be uncovered. It is not a romantic comedy, despite having an unusual romantic subplot, and there are certainly some very funny passages in the book. It also won an award for popular fiction at the Specsavers National Book Awards, despite being both compelling and psychologically taxing in places. It is an easy and enjoyable read that will stay with its audience. A book of contradictions that works wonderfully well on several levels.
There is no such thing as hell, of course. But if there was, then the soundtrack to the screaming, the pitchfork action, and the infernal wailing of damned souls would be a looped medley of show tunes drawn from the annals of musical theatre. The complete oeuvre of Lloyd Webber and Rice would be performed without breaks on a stage inside the fiery pit, and an audience of sinners would be forced to watch and listen for eternity. The very worst amongst them, the child molesters and the murderous dictators, would have to perform them. Save for the exquisite oeuvre of a certain Mr. Lomond, I have yet to find a genre of music I enjoy. It's basically audible physics, waves and energised particles, and like most sane people, I have no interest in physics. It therefore struck me as bizarre that I was humming a tune from Oliver. I mentally added the exclamation mark, which for the first time ever was appropriate. Who will buy this wonderful evening? Who indeed? One of the foster carers kept a video library of musicals that we worked our way through en famille at weekends. And so, although I fervently wish that I wasn't, I'm very familiar with the work of Lionel Bart, Rodgers and Hammerstein et al. Knowing I was here on the street where he lived was giving me a funny feeling, fluttery and edgy, verging on euphoric. I could almost understand why that frock-coated buffoon from My Fair Lady had felt the need to bellow about it outside Audrey Hepburn's window. Finding out where the musician lived had been easy. He had posted a picture of a lovely sunset on Twitter. At Johnny L. Rocks. The view from my window. How lucky am I? Hashtag summer in the city, hashtag blessed. It showed rooftops, trees and sky, but there was also a pub in the corner of the photograph right at the end of the street. Its name clearly visible. I found it in seconds, thanks to Google. The street, like most in this part of the city, was made up of tenements. They all had a secure main front door with named buzzers on the outside wall, one for each flat inside the building. This was the right street. Which side should I start with? Even numbers, I decided. He was an even sort of man, not an odd one. I had a puzzle to solve. I hummed as I worked, and couldn't remember the last time I'd felt like this. Light, sparkly, quick. I suspected that it might be what happiness felt like.
This is Honeyman's first novel, and an assured and original piece of work it is too. Her second book is currently in hand and awaited eagerly by the many fans of Eleanor Oliphant. I am also curious to see what her next book may bring. Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine, is not the sort of book I would usually choose, but I enjoyed it immensely. It is well written, has intricate and realistic characters, and a cracking story. I'm really glad I tried it, and if you've not read it yet, I would recommend you give it a go too.
Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting, podbean.com. Probably the best download decision you'll ever make.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
100. Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245 grams of magnesium, 3
grams of
one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854-742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition.
Yeah, I think that's true. Well, there we are. The amazing Book of the Month, Eleanor Oliphant, is completely fine. And after Jenny's wonderful little piece there, we turn immediately to Rob, who I know, Rob, you're all set and ready to actually do Adrian Tchaikovsky's Children of Ruin, but I've promised to yourself and the listener, I've got that written, I'll put it together. We don't want to stress people out, because otherwise we'll end up like Eleanor Oliphant on that one. So
that's true.
Happen.
That's very true, yeah.
Exactly. Just in case there are any sort of Tchaikovsky fans who are saying, why? Why are we not? It's all right. We're focusing on this particular thing. And what did you make of this debut novel by Gail Honeyman?
Tremendous book. A lot. I agree with so much that Jenny said about Book of Contrasts and the fact that the central character is, well, it's cringeworthy to start off with. And it takes quite a long way into the book before you can stop cringing. But it's incredible to see the world through her eyes and her as her eyes gradually opened for the better and for the worse. And then some of the other characters around her, Raymond is an incredible person, really. The patience and the allowance he gives for Eleanor. But very interesting, and interesting that you should set something in that setting in somebody who works and lives in Glasgow in a town, but somebody who's totally isolated, even though they go to work every day with people around them, they're completely in their own shell and very lonely in many respects. And certainly at the moment, it's weird, but I do like a message board, and dealing with a couple of cases of people who are it's similar, extremely isolated, go to work, come home, live on their own, and finding it really, really challenged. They live and work away, and they don't interact with any family or anything like that.
And just finally, because if you start saying, and they travel up to Lincoln on a weekly basis, I'd say, well, that's it. You know, you nailed me. It's gone. But that's the point in any sense, that there is that sort of aspect where I don't think Eleanor is kind of committed to work, but it's clearly the only kind of regularity she has.
Yeah, apart from going to Tesco.
And other supermarkets are available, and she does mention, I think, one or two, but that's a reason it probably lost a couple of points for me, actually, because I felt that, you know, overdoing the whole thing, and I couldn't necessarily agree with her buy one, get one free excitements that were coming through on that basis. But it does capture that. Now, again, clearly the character is academically very bright. You know, she's clearly been to university. She's worked through that process.
Yeah.
And has had a major issue from that perspective. We do see a change. I didn't actually find her particularly off-putting at start. I did get a sense for the opening parts of really resonating with the Bridget Jones character up to a point. There were certain elements there which
up
I thought
up to a point.
Up to, you know, secretary work and so on, and then falling in love with an idol.
What about the point that when there's a man who collapses in the street?
Well,
the way she doesn't deal with it, she would walk away, wouldn't she, if it wasn't for Raymond?
And actually, I think most human beings probably would. I thought that was actually quite realistic. There was that sense of, well, is he just drunk? Is it just a case of that? And it was an interesting twist in terms of obviously how that particular character and his family kind of lead on to a whole, you know, key aspect of the whole thing.
Definitely.
I mean,
it's no
surprise to me that Reese Witherspoon, probably going to get an Academy Award for her portrayal of Judy Garland in the movie Judy, has already purchased the rights to Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine.
Right.
Because I could see, and that's another Bridget Jones connection. I don't think Reese Witherspoon herself will actually take on board the role, but I think it's geared up for an actress, possibly Emma Stone, maybe. Just throw that out there to actually take on board the role. And I think it'll do very well because it is a well-put-together, well-structurally coordinated book. How did you find the conversations with the mother, and the switch into line yourself proper Geordie every so often that was brought in to the whole sort of system?
Oh yes, in the background, as Johnny said, it just keeps coming back to whatever she might achieve during the week. There's the mother in some strange, distant place,
constantly seeking parental approval,
and constantly doing her down, and constantly trying to interfere with her life.
I could actually use Philip Larkin's phrase at this moment, but because we're broadcasting on a podcast, I won't, apart from saying his overall line was, parents, they F you up.
Right.
And there are lots of other connections within that whole field. Do you think that Honeyman kind of addresses that parental aspect, you know, really effectively? There is a major spoiler here, which I won't reveal, but in terms of the sequence, as I was saying to Jenny beforehand, I'd kind of thought that was where we were heading. But is that something where, in terms of the case of a dysfunctional family, where you clearly just have a single parent who's very much the dominant parent and so on, that maybe that's part of, you know, what ultimately has a character who is, in an era where we talk about mental well-being, mentally unwell?
No, absolutely. Eleanor can't escape a mother. She can't escape a past. And every week she's... No matter how much she's kind of progressing through the book in many respects, a mother's there to knock her down again and remind her who she is and tell her that they've got the same genes and stuff like that, and that almost like she's now living through her daughter and that she wants her daughter to be as destructive as she was.
And there are a number of, I think, laugh-out-loud moments, to use that quaint phrase, which probably dates me already as part of Turn of the Century now. But I thought her reaction to her first rock concert, or possibly Grime, I think would be the current experience, was there.
She was a fact-finding mission that
backfired horrendously from that point of view. Again, it's intriguing that step-by-step, you're always seeing it through the eyes of an alien. I mean, if it was a science fiction text, you'd say Eleanor Oliphant is an alien. You know, she's kind of experiencing...
Yes, she goes to things that, like, she gets herself made up and all the sorts of different the clothing and her reaction, makeup.
Her reaction to being given a Brazilian is priceless. Look it up if you're sensitive in terms of what Brazilians actually are. He thought he might. So I think that was very good. And again,
but some of the things that, because she's quite brilliant and she can take things on quite quickly, when she's getting the makeup and everything, she's like, I could do this myself, do it much better.
Yeah. So again, that kind of, in a real sense, the eccentric genius sort of portrayed through.
Which is obviously really, really able at work as well.
Yeah. Did you like Eleanor overall at the end of the book?
I mean, yeah.
You use the line, Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine. Did you feel that actually it worked well? Or were you always a secret Raymond fan? Did you think actually?
I was a Raymond fan. Yeah. I thought Raymond was tremendous. But yes, no, I did.
Just
like
saint, wasn't he, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In a kind of hands off way, really, wasn't he? Mm.
The other interesting thing, which for me just jarred slightly, was the tale of her first marriage, because I thought, for somebody who's so, that fed into the problems that we actually see here. Clearly, she was in an abusive relationship, and maybe that also led to, understandably, the notion that if you have that, it becomes much more difficult to reach out, and so you internalize, and so you go through a situation of effectively maybe cutting yourself off, and she's like, oh, happy to do so.
Mm, absolutely, it's all kind of feeds into the person that she became and settled for and thought was the normality.
As expected, Honeyman is already starting work on another text, which I think deals with two time periods, the Second World War and the present day, if I recall, in terms of where she's going from. But let's bring Jenny back. She's been out for a quick coffee, or not, as the case may be.
Quick vodka.
Please, Jenny, don't go there. It's not good for the liver, as I frequently said. You've been listening, actually, to what Rob and myself have been saying. Any thoughts that sort of have sprung ideas from your own perspective, which you thought, oh, yeah, that's an interesting point I hadn't considered, or not?
Yes, I found it a very touching book. I found Eleanor very difficult at times, because there are tiny echoes of some part of my life that came through there. And I found her total incomprehension faced with ordinary people the most amusing and the most painful thing. There's a scene where she goes to visit the man who collapsed in hospital, and they're taking him some food, and she takes a small jar of squid salad and some kale because it's very healthy and that's what you need to get better. And I thought, this complete misunderstanding of a perfectly normal situation was hilarious and very sad.
That coupled with her choice of reading material from the top shelf was quite interesting.
Yes.
Obviously dating it from that point of view, but again, I thought, okay. Yes. Interesting. So, I mean, we're loath to actually do this. And as I say, for me, it lost points because of the brand contamination of obviously the T word that was mentioned, the overuse of vodka. But having said that, it was well written. It was well put together. I'm going to go 7.5. I'm thrusting myself in first there with a 7.5. Rob?
9.
And Jenny?
8.5. It's a cracking debut.
Oh, and you see already that sort of reaction of getting 7.5 is leading to somebody obviously dialing up and sort of, you know, phoning in that.
Haranguing you.
Protesting.
It's outrageous. Might be persuaded. We'll see how things actually go. Next month, or whenever we get together, which probably will be back in October, early November and so on, you have selected somebody that you've actually met. So again, known to your good self, Jenny.
It is indeed. It is The Last by Hannah Jameson.
And you encountered Hannah at the Morecambe and Vice Festival.
I did.
Nothing to do with the Ernie and Eric numbers, of course.
Nice pun, though.
But very nice indeed, which is excellent stuff there. And just share with us, for Book of the Month readers, how that, and listeners, why that was an important part for yourself and your role as a crime writer.
The Morecambe and Vice Festival is a festival for crime writers, and it was my first big festival and the first time I was asked to be a panellist. Somehow, Tom and Ben, who organise it, managed to find three dyslexic crime writers, which could have been an absolute disaster. In fact, it was an extraordinarily good panel. It was a cracking good weekend. And when it comes around the middle of September next year, do go. It is one of the best weekends I've had at the beautiful Midland Hotel. And you all know the Midland Hotel if you've watched Poirot, because it turns up in a number of those. It's glorious.
There we are. And whilst we're doing shameless plugs, Rob, quick plug for Discover Middlesbrough, which starts off in a few weeks' time.
Well, actually starts on Sunday with a talk that's been on the national news, really. Well, the subject matter, because it's in the land of the long white clouds, which is, it talks about Cook landing in New Zealand,
and you've seen it. And Phil Philo is giving
the
talk.
And Phil Philo is giving the talk, former curator, and he was talking about the interaction with the Maoris. 11 o'clock, Captain Cook Birthplace Museum at Stewart Park. £3, but that includes tea and biscuits.
Just outrageously wonderful. And if you're listening to this after that date has actually gone by, which would be October the 6th, that's right, then worry not, because there's stacks of other great stuff happening as far as Discover Middlesbrough Month is actually concerned.
Until November the 3rd, I think. Yes. Exactly.
Splendid stuff. A reminder, Jenny, it's the last by Hannah Jameson for the next Book of the Month.
It is.
Shall we say keep reading is our catchphrase?
Oh, I think so. Okay. There is no such thing as too many books.
A one, two, three. Keep reading. Rob wasn't quite connected with that one. He's said,
next time.
Fly me to the moon.
Next time.
Shall we do that? Shall we do it one more time?
Yes.
A one, two, three.
Keep reading.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer.